Sehr verehrte Damen und Herren, herzlich begrüßt in Washington, D.C. Wir befinden uns im War Room und neben mir sitzt ein berühmt-berüchtigter Mann, Steve Bannon. Er war Chefstratege von Donald Trump in der ersten Amtszeit und Gast in Zürich. Die Weltwoche hat ihm das erste Podium geboten in Europa. Und durch diesen War Room, wo er seinen Podcast macht seit 2019, sind sehr viele Figuren, die jetzt in der Regierung von Trump sind, durchgegangen. Und meine erste Frage wird sein, was ist von dieser neuen Regierung Trump zu erwarten? Steve Bannon.
How you doing, sir? Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having us. Now, I just told the Swiss audience that this is the War Room. This is where you do your podcast, the War Room. And many of the key figures in Trump's new administration came through this War Room.
Yes.
You interviewed them. My first question.
When I just interviewed, they were contributors. My first co-host was Jason Miller, who was his comms director. We got, on the economic side, Scott Bessent is a contributor. He's Secretary of Treasury. Russ Vogts, the head of OMB, which does all the budgeting in America. And Peter Navarro was one of my co-hosts and contributors for years. He's the president's right-hand man on trade and manufacturing, senior counsel to the president. But virtually everybody important to the MAGA movement has either been a contributor or been here interviewed.
Now, where are they leading us with Trump together in the next 4 years? Because you know them very well. What is the direction they are heading?
The three things we have to deal with immediately, one is the kinetic wars of the Third World War and the Eurasian landmass, Ukraine, the Middle East, also China. Okay. Number two is the deportations of about, think about this for a second, 12 to 15 million illegal alien invaders that were just here on Biden's watch. This is not all the illegals that have come in over the, because that could be 30 or 40 million people. We're talking just on Biden's last 4 years, 12 to 15 million, which President Trump has made an obligation to do. Then the hardest part, quite frankly, is the financial situation in the United States. We have about $36 trillion in debt. We're adding about another $1 trillion every 100 days. We're running massive budget deficits. When I talked about the size of the government, it's $6.5 or $7 trillion. Our total revenues all in are $5 trillion. And this will be very important to your audience. I'll get back into a second about tariffs and trade. President Trump, the way you govern is three types of ways here in the United States. Number one is called executive orders. That's the president just signs an executive order. It's kind of a decree. Now, it's been checked out by the Office of Legal Counsel over the Justice Department to make sure that it complies with the Constitution as legal. He is anticipated to sign 100 executive orders on Monday, immediately. That is probably going to be probably 50. A lot of those will deal with the border. Some will deal with tariff and trade. Some will deal with some foreign policy. A lot will deal with the woke nature of what's going on in public schools and everything. So assume 50 on day one. Also, you saw the cabinet nominees is about personnel. 1,000 people will go in that don't need to be confirmed by the Senate. Marco Rubio probably will be take the oath right after President Trump in a private room or at the State Department. He will be the Secretary of State. There'll be others that come in very quickly from last week, the Secretary of Treasury, et cetera. And then the third is really laws or passing Congress, and they're in the process of drafting. You also should know at noon, I believe President Trump is going to sign an order. The first order he's going to sign is basically firing everybody in Biden's administration. All 3,000 people will be told, pack your bags, you're gone immediately. That includes attorneys, U.S. attorneys. This will be the biggest shakeup in a government. Now, we refer to Monday as days of thunder. You should anticipate.
That's who refers that.
We came over the time. Well, in 16, it was shock and awe, and I said this is so much bigger because we've had more time to prepare. You know, and this victory was bigger. It's a coalition, so we call it days of thunder, and that's and you should know it's already been leaked, or they told the Wall Street Journal they're going to have a major ICE raid, which is the internal enforcement of immigration in the country
Chicago.
No, here's why in Chicago. In Chicago, and you should understand in our country, the invasion by 15 million people just didn't happen. It was very well thought through between these NGOs, much of what's happening in Europe, right, with the NGOs doing it, working with compliant open borders government. In our cities, New York City, Chicago, L.A., particularly the three biggest cities, are sanctuary cities. That means they have come up with their own idea that federal enforcement of immigration law is banned. Now, in New York City, the mayor has basically said we can't do that. He got rid of sanctuary cities because it's destroying New York City. What happened to him is that immediately they indicted him by the thing. He was down last night having dinner with President Trump in Los Angeles. You saw the horrible fires they had. They've already said, hey, we're not going to fight you on sanctuary cities. Chicago mayor has told the president, if you send any agent here to take out a criminal illegal alien, we will throw you out of Chicago. And so the president, and this overall, Trump is going to force the action. He's going to force the action in Chicago.
So there will be resistance, but there's also conflict in your camp because, you know, a key role.
Is there?
Yeah. Well, we read a lot about it. Maybe you can explain us what happened between you and Elon Musk. Elon Musk plays a key role. I mean, he's interviewing Alice Weidel. He's, as Germans say, interfering in the German elections. And you were confronting him with very harsh ways. I think you wanted to take him out of the government. Can you explain me what is this feud going on?
So three things that Elon has done positively. Number one, he backed our play. Our theory of the case in the election was it was going to be a grassroots, a MAGA plus election, that it had to be low propensity, low information voters, plus these kind of moms, these red pill dissident moms that got turned off during the pandemic, saw as being taught in American schools, a lot of LGBTQ and also drag queen story hour. These women got really turned, became more Trump, and you had to get them out to vote. Elon Musk did something that's extraordinary in American history. He wrote a $250 million check. That would be a quarter of $1 billion.
Some people say Trump wouldn't have won without that
it's
money.
It's Steve Bannon is one. It would have been much tighter. I'm not sure we would have held the House and taken the Senate. In our numbers, President Trump won the popular vote. Not sure we won the popular vote. I mean, a quarter of $1 million, not in TV ads. This was all to support the ground game. And this is what made the difference in up in the blue wall, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. President Trump would have won, but this was such a surge of cash. Mainly when you see our billionaires and they talk about putting in $100 million, that's over a four-year cycle. This was concentrated at the end. That's what he did. Number one. Number two, we have talked about, and we talked about when we came to Switzerland, what's called the administrative state and the deep state. I have been the leading theoretician on the deconstruction of the administrative state. President Trump tried to do a little bit in his first term. We didn't get as much traction as we wanted because the deep state pushed back so hard. It's been a big theoretical thing we've been working on for this to get the right people in to take it apart. Elon came up and had volunteered with DOGE, and DOGE is an independent consulting and advisory firm working with Office of Management and Budget to actually take the government apart and downsize it so we can afford it.
So he's a good guy.
Well, in that regard. And number three, all the work, as we did starting in 2018 coming with you, we're populist nationalists working with these groups over there. He has come in and actually said he will support Alternative for Deutschland and others. And I tell people, Europe's not prepared for this. And this is why. There's not a lot of money in European politics. I mean, if you write a $50 million check, which here is not, you know, won't make a difference if you just do one. If you wrote a $50 million check in the United Kingdom or Norway or France or Germany or Switzerland, you're a game changer. So he brings what I call the two tactical nuclear weapons of modern politics: unlimited cash, which he can write a check and won't change his lifestyle, and he brings a social media platform that he can get your views up if he so deems, and he can suppress your voice if he so deems also. That's just reality. There's not a centrist government in Europe, either center right or center left, that will be able to withstand an onslaught if he comes in hard. Now, that being said, so he's done some positive things that I support him on and have been his
biggest... You call him a racist.
Biggest shit. Well, here's why. Is that all of a sudden over Christmas, because we have a problem here in the United States of immigration. One problem, which Europe has seen, is this illegal alien onslaught. Now, we have 12 to 15 million just on Biden's watch that we have a huge program of deportations. That's going to be, quite frankly, very controversial. President Trump is kicking it off on Tuesday with 200 agents going to Chicago to do a mass deportation. We also have a problem here in the United States of what we call legal immigration with these visas. And Silicon Valley has been a huge abuser of this. They have taken these visas and they say they're for skilled foreign workers in the tech side. It's just a way to pay people a third to 50% less and to have them compliant as basically indentured servants for indentured servitude here in the 21st century, normally coming from South Asia, basically India, 85%. It's unfair to them, and it's particularly unfair to American workers who are all at the same level, right? Because they have not shown one. Over Christmas, it's got to be a huge fight because of some of President Trump's appointments in other areas where huge guys proposing this. And he came in, and I was prepared to be, not be quiet, find a policy basis. But Elon came out and called American workers retards. He then called American workers in MAGA. He said we were racist, we were nativists, and should be turfed out of the Republican Party. Well, no offense. This movement is made up of these people. They're not going to leave. They're President Trump's biggest backer. So I got into it with him and say, hey, look, dude, he essentially said—
You had it out with him.
He said, anybody that opposed me H-1B visas, go fuck yourself in the face. And he said, I'm going to fight a war against you guys with using tools you haven't even agree with. And I said, dude, bring it on. I actually put out on my social media account, will Child Protective Services do a bed check or a wellness call on the toddler because he's throwing a fit? And I just said publicly right there, I'm never going to back down on this because we will always defend American workers.
But wait a minute. I mean, I think one of the lessons of Trump won is that there should be unity. There should be unity and in the cause and fighting.
But this
spirit.
Is the but hang on, but, hang but on, stop,
when
stop.
You start with a feud.
No, stop. It's over a fundamental issue. You think we're just going to roll over and tell the guys in Silicon Valley that we're prepared to have American workers replaced by foreign workers? No, that's not unity. That's surrender. We'll never surrender. Remember, our movement is about not just America first. It's about American citizens first. I'm a populist nationalist. Mm-hmm. Our goal is not just to defend the American citizen, but to make sure the American citizen gets a better deal than everybody. Because right now, the whole system depends. It rests on the shoulders of the American citizen. The whole global economy rests on the shoulders. Mm-hmm. All the military, the protection, quite frankly, of Europe rests on the, right now, in the Red Sea, there are two carrier battle groups with 10,000, each carrier battle group's got 10,000 sailors to it. Because I used to be in those carrier battle, hang on, keeping the Suez Canal open for trade into Europe. We don't care by the way, the people in the United States could care less of the Suez Canal open. We're doing this as an obligation to NATO because no offense, the Europeans won't pay for it. So we're doing it now. Those people must be defended back in their home country to have foreign workers brought in to take away their wages and take away their jobs. It won't happen. So when you say unity, that's a false unity. That's just agreeing with, and we'll never agree to this. Like I said, these oligarchs, which we've now broken, right? Because all the oligarchs.
You call them the oligarchs, yes.
Well, they are their oligarchs, and they were all progressive Democrats. These platforms were used for 2 and 3, basically 6 or 7 years to oppress us and suppress our voices, right? This is a surrender.
Zuckerberg, Bezos.
All of Zuckerberg, Facebook, Twitter, Google, YouTube, all of it, right? Amazon, they were all there to suppress our voices. We defeated them. President Trump is the instrument that did that. We defeated them. And people say, well, they're all coming to sit here at the thing. I said, no. That is like the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Harbor in September of 1945. This is a surrender. It's like the Japanese high command, Imperial Japan, surrendering to Douglas MacArthur, Trump's Douglas MacArthur. He's not giving these guys anything. All they've come is with their $1 million checks and their $5 million checks as supplicants. So no, we cannot surrender these guys on policy. We have to fight them every step of the way.
How long is the honeymoon between Trump and Elon Musk?
Well, when you talk about the honeymoon, Elon has influence, but he doesn't have power. If you go back and look at every candidate I supported for a major role versus Elon, I won. Let's be very specific on Scott Bessent,
who was a key figure.
Secretary of Treasury, probably one of the top 2 or 3 cabinet officials. He came out for Howard Lutnick and smeared Bessent, said he was a Soros guy. He's everything far from a Soros guy. I stepped in and said, this is BS, and we drove it home, and Scott Bessent is Secretary of Treasury. You've seen it over and over again. Elon has influence. There's no doubt about that. But also in the fight the other day, I said, I was fighting to not let him in the White House and make sure he didn't have open access to the president. Well, the New York Times reported he's not in the White House. Mm-hmm. He's on the compound, the White House compound, the executive office building.
And you warned people he shouldn't be allowed, let into the White House.
Into the White, if he's let in at all, it's got to be under situations that has to be monitored. So he doesn't have free access. He's across the street, the executive office building. And I said, that's like being in Siberia, yeah, right? So you know the White House compound. If you don't have access to the West Wing, open a free access, you're not there.
You went to Mar-a-Lago recently.
Yes, I did.
What is your relationship today with Trump?
Because look at President Trump on War Room. Everything we talk about War Room, he's always putting an executive order. He's talking this our show. We are without any qualification 10 times what Fox is. The biggest supporter of President Trump on content. And so the relationship couldn't be better. But President Trump and I don't agree on everything. This is what I tell people. Mm-hmm. President, I'm a hard right populist nationalist. I'm the same guy that came to Switzerland in 2018. I believe in the same policies. President Trump is going to announce trade policies with Europe on Monday. And I think it's going to be days of thunder, shock and awe. He's got a very strong way he thinks about trade as not just bringing jobs back, but also bringing revenues into the United States, what we call the External Revenue Service. We're a huge believer in that. But President Trump and I don't agree with everything. I'm much farther to the right than President Trump. And President Trump's trying to unify not just the MAGA movement, he's trying to unify the country. That's why he sees his role as President of the United States, which I don't have the burden of. I can be a hard right partisan.
Where you all have the same opinion on is Ukraine. You both obviously want to stop, end that war soon.
Day one. Well, that's where we kind of not disagree. I think he's getting bad guidance. If they hadn't stolen the 2020 election, there would have been no war in Ukraine. There'd be no death in Ukraine. And I said in this very room at that microphone on the evening of the evening before when the invasion took off, if we don't get into a room and negotiate with Putin, right, immediately, you're going to have millions of people dead. So where are we? I said, and we're going to be in the same exact place on a territorial basis that you are today. The eastern Russian-speaking provinces of Ukraine are going to be Russian, and so is Crimea. That's not going to change. So where are we almost 3 years later? Here's where we are. I don't know. We've put $500 billion collectively of cash into Ukraine. Think about that. $500 billion that didn't go into Europe and to make Europe better, didn't go into the United States. We spent over $200 billion. There are 1 million dead Ukrainians, dead or wounded Ukrainians. There are 750,000 dead or wounded Russians. So we have 1.75 million casualties. We have a country now that looks like Dresden in 1945. And President Trump's going to step in there. And the best deal you're going to get is those provinces and Crimea are going to be Russian. That's the best deal you're going to get. My advice to President Trump, and I think he's been very amenable to all these people that started the war, the Boris Johnsons of the world, and all these horrible people that started this war and led the Ukrainians down the primrose path, because I said on the War Room the first night, the Davos, Brussels, NATO, the city of London, Washington, D.C., the globalists here, they're going to lead the Ukrainian people down the primrose path to their destruction. And when it becomes uncomfortable or unpleasant for the leadership of the West to have to deal with this anymore, they're going to cut them loose. And here's where we are today. My recommendation to President Trump is end it day one. They're going to try to suck you into a situation like Vietnam, where it's your war. You can't, and right now people say with 100 days or 6 months, if this is 100 days, they're going to say this is Trump's defeat. President Trump has nothing to do with this. He argued against this. If he was president, this would never happen. He's a man of peace and prosperity. He cannot get sucked into the Ukrainian war. And the Europeans and the Swiss, you guys got to understand, the hardcore right of President Trump's movement wants out of Ukraine at 1 minute after high noon on Monday. We want out. We don't want any more money. We don't want any security guarantee. There will be no, according to us, and I do not speak for President Trump, we want no security guarantee. that has any American involvement. If NATO and the Swiss and these people, if you want to send troops, you want to have a security guarantee, and you want to put the money in ongoing for the reconstruction of Ukraine and for a security guarantee, have at it. You're the ones that say the Russian army is such a big problem. Do it. President Trump is looking at Greenland and looking at, to cut the Chinese Communist Party off, looking at taking the Panama Canal, which is ours, and looking at somehow with an independent Greenland, working something out to stop the Russian Navy coming through the Greenland-Iceland-UK gap, the Russian submarine. So he's taking a Mahan strategy and putting forward the borders of the strategic of Fortress America and telling the Europeans, hey, look, the Russian army is your problem. You're going to have to deal with it. And I think the place is in Ukraine. And we are adamant as people that are President Trump's lead supporters, say, President Trump, please stop this immediately. Tell Zelensky no more arms, no more money. Force him to the negotiate table with the Russians. And maybe President Trump can get the Russian army to back off the Dnieper River and back off back to the Donbass and Crimea.
A last question about China, because you've been focusing on China for a very long time. TikTok should be off the net, I think, by Monday. I hear that Trump is thinking about extending that term. First of all, what's your opinion on the ban of TikTok, and how should the West face towards China?
Well, first off, I am the hardest core here. You know, I'm the only civilian in the history of this nation ever to be fully sanctioned by the Chinese Communist Party. Fully sanctioned. Okay, and it happened at 1 minute after Joe Biden took his hand off the Bible when Joe Biden took the oath of office. The Chinese Communist Party, Navarro, myself, Mike Pompeo, and a couple others, they fully sanctioned us. And those guys were government employees at the time. I wear it as a badge of honor. One of my life's goal is working with Lao Bajing, which is the common man and woman in China, to overthrow this brutal, murderous dictatorship, which is one of the worst, if not the worst, dictatorship in the history of the country, far worse than the Bolsheviks, far worse than the Nazis. They've killed 250 million Chinese, their own people, and they're proud of it. That being said, TikTok to me has always been an information platform of the Chinese Communist Party. Anything that's state-owned in China reports to the PLA and to the Chinese Communist Party.
So it should be banned.
Well, I've always been for banned, but what I've opened to is Western ownership. If a deal can be put together, I think President Trump's the same way. TikTok has done a great job. Look,
it's freedom of speech.
It's freedom of speech, but you got to look at the algorithm and what it does. The TikTok you see in the West is not the TikToks in China. These algorithms, remember, in modern technology, it's no longer about freedom, it's about dominance. And the technology is written in such a way, the algorithm is written in such a way, particularly young minds get formed by this. We have to be very, very careful about this. Artificial intelligence and advances in technology are just not, like in the old days, think, well, this is great, it's a new advance. We have to be very careful about these advances, including artificial intelligence. And combined with a mechanism, a delivery mechanism like TikTok, has a lot of positives. Here's done a lot for small business, but it's also going to be very dangerous. This is why it cannot be in ownership of Chinese Communist Party hands. President Trump is saying, hey, the Supreme Court is backing a law that President Trump initially was very much in back of, and it was passed under Biden and he signed it. And what President Trump is saying now, well, hang on, let's see if we can't get a deal done. And, you know, President Trump just did not back the Japanese takeover, Nippon Steel takeover of U.S. Steel, because he thinks there's an American alternative. The same thing with TikTok. I think you're going to have multiple bids by U.S. investors and Western European investors combined that looks to take over the company and manage the company so that it's open in the algorithms. And this is not going to be easy. There's going to be a huge fight. The Chinese don't want to give over the algorithm. But I think you see this is President Trump. He is a deal maker, and he's trying to balance a lot of different things. He's trying to balance, obviously, the people on the hard right that say, hey, China isn't back of everything. He's also trying to work with the tech guys who are totally open to working the Chinese Communist Party. And it's a balancing act. But here we support President Trump, as we do on most things, to say, look, you're doing the best you can, and we're here to support you. There are some things we may differ on. Some of the stuff on immigration we try to balance. We'll say, hey, look, we want to do it harder. But we're still by order of 10 magnitude, we're the biggest. This platform supports President Trump 24 hours a day, and the people love him here and realize what he came all the way back for all the jail term. Folks, you got to understand, they wanted the felony charges, the 92 felony charges it added up to over 400 years in prison. They wanted him to die in prison. They tried to assassinate him, right? What's happened to this man is more than's happened to anybody in human history, in political history, and he overcame it all. And so he's got a bonding with the MAGA base that is a spiritual bonding. It goes beyond politics. So that's what you're going to see this week as he gets, as he comes back. And I just wish it was outside, even if it was 10 degrees, so the huge audience could see it and people can appreciate it.
Just the last question, because you mentioned prison. You went to prison.
I
think 3 months, was
four.
It? 4 months.
Don't cut my month off.
Okay, so you went to prison because you didn't want to participate in the hearing on the January 6th commission. Can you tell me what did that to you, prison time? Well, did you, you know, is there a different, you don't seem different, but did something change within you in that prison cell?
Well, let's talk about this for a second. In our nation, our constitution, we have separation of powers. You have the Congress, you have the justices and the Supreme Court, the federal courts, and you have the executive branch. In this, I made a principled stand on our Constitution. Nancy Pelosi, a Speaker of the House, had arranged a committee that was illegitimate. The committee had no official Republicans on it. She had turned them down and picked two stooges, you know, Liz Cheney being the big one, and they had no minority counsel. We had no ability at all to look at the evidence, et cetera. And I said,
You said it was a hoax.
I said, it's a hoax. I'm not going to do it. Plus, the president gave me executive privilege in my conversations with him. The president has the right to talk to anybody. Now, the U.S. appellate court has not even ruled on mine, but the judge said, hey, look, you got to go to prison. I said, not a problem. I'm the only misdemeanor in history ever to go to federal prison. I didn't go to a camp. I went to a prison with a cell block in a cell with convicts, right? It empowered me because at 70 and 71 years old, it's a very dangerous place. This is a place of a lot of tough, you know, bad hombres, right? Some good men.
Did you feel threatened in there?
Listen, you got to keep your head in the game. There are people getting stabbed all the time because of drugs. What happens is that the nonviolent drug dealers get 10 and 15 and 20 year sentences at the age of 25 years old. You and this audience and me would have a very difficult time. The Danbury Prison is a very compact place. For the next 20 years of your life, you're going to be in a cell block, a cell, and in a little yard with a little small rec thing for the next 20 years of your life from the time you're 25 to 45. That is so hard for men to take, particularly African-American, Hispanic men are there for nonviolent offenses that they end up doing drugs, this drug called K2. And when they do that, it turns wild. So there's a very dangerous place. You got to keep your head in the game all the time. That being said, let's look at today. You know, I'm about to, you know, have my show and be a active part of President Trump's movement and be an active part of all my buddies are going in to work in the White House to go into the administration. We have people here all the time. This show is more powerful than it's ever been. The audience is bigger. It's millions of people watch this show every day. Steve Bannon's here. Not only did they not break me, they wanted to take me off the campaign and break me. I was more involved in the campaign because of all my people, and we had Next Man Up. I had different young people host the show every day. So the show came out bigger. I came back and 48 hours or 24 hours before President Trump takes the oath, Nancy Pelosi has essentially been kicked out of the curb in the Democratic Party. They're accusing her of the defeat of Biden. And also Liz Cheney this weekend and Benny Thompson, the chairman and the vice chairman, the co-chairman of the committee, are at the White House begging for blanket preemptive pardons. Mm-hmm. Steve Bannon's more focused, more powerful than ever, has come back, is all over media, and those people are broken. So you tell me how to work out for. I will tell you this for the American people. If you take a principled stand and you're prepared to go to prison for it, and I tell everybody in our movement against all the lawfare that comes, look, President Trump, if you're not prepared to go to prison, we're not going to break the deep state. This is just an entry thing. If you're not prepared on your activities for them to send you to prison when you're totally innocent, then you're in the wrong line of work. So there's nothing. I came here. There's nothing. You've been to prison at 70 years old and living in a cell with a cellmate in a cell block with 84 guys. And, you know, 40% of those guys are sex offenders. You get very focused very quickly. So you've got to be totally focused. But I'm more powerful and more empowered now than ever. And they're all broken and shattered, begging the White House to give them a preemptive blanket pardon. No, we're going to tell you what. And they're going to try. If people think this fight's over, don't. Monday at noon, the fight really starts. That's when they're going to come after President Trump harder than they've ever come before.
So you said victory is not yet, you haven't achieved yet a victory. It's only the beginning. Is that correct?
Yes. But winning one, yes, we win a sweeping victory, and it's amazing, House, Senate, and they're saying, and Trump is the most powerful political person in Washington, D.C. That only means something for 24 hours. It means we're going to have the budget fights. We're going to have the deportations. We're going to try to end the war. Mm-hmm. The deep state's not going away. The opposition, the radical progressive left is not going to go away. We're going to have to fight this every day. And this is why I'm going around town telling people, say, look, I love the celebratory mood. I'm glad that people, but a lot of the people coming to celebrate are late to our movement. The hardcores, the battle-hardened troops that delivered this victory, they are in this to save their country, and they understand what's going on. The fight really starts at high noon on Monday. And I would tell the audience in Switzerland, hey, we're all working together to save the Judeo-Christian West, and our fight collectively really starts on Monday. So strap in, buckle up, and pay attention.
All fired up. Thank you very much.
You wouldn't expect anything less. As President Trump said, fight, fight, fight.